please the Court. My name is Alfred Huang, certified law student, appearing on behalf of petitioner Mr. Domingo Musquiz under the supervision of Catherine Davis and the UC Irvine Appellate Litigation Clinic. I respectfully request 3 minutes for rebuttal. This Court should reverse the Railroad Retirement Board's decision for several reasons. First, the Board's failure to consider Mr. Musquiz's ability to understand his reporting requirements despite evidence of that inability is grounds for reversal.
Why?
The Board's own regulation states that when determining fault, the Board must consider ability of the overpaid individual to understand reporting requirements of the RA or to realize he or she is being overpaid using factors such as age, education, special comprehension, physical and mental condition, and they failed to do so. And that
did Mr. Musquiz raise any issues as to his ability to understand?
He did, Your Honor.
In what way?
Multiple ways. In the testimony, for example, on pages 186, 187, 189, 191, there are many examples of him not remembering what he signed, received, read, not being able to comprehend some of these materials. The memorandum from the district manager to the debt specialist in the very first instance on page 134, the district manager says that Mr. Musquiz asserted that he misunderstood and was ignorant about what was going on, did not have the technical ability to understand all the information provided to him. And I stress technical ability because, again, according to the board's own regulations, it had to consider ability of the overpaid individual to understand the reporting requirements of the RA. And not only that, Your Honor, the factors include age, education, comprehension, physical and mental condition, at multiple points in the record, before even getting to the ALJ in this matter, the hearings officer, Mr. Musquiz says that he's diabetic. He's a type 1 diabetic. He has kidney, prostate, heart conditions. He's got deteriorating health issues in this on pages 143 and 170 of the hearings record. Multiple times, he brings it up to the hearings officer. The hearings officer does not mention it, does not mention the type 1 diabetes, does not mention, ability to understand reporting requirements, things like age, education, comprehension, and physical and mental condition. And according to this court in Anderson,
did they send him any kind of a questionnaire to show what his education was, or did they already know his health and all that? They would have known that, wouldn't they?
They did send a financial disclosure where, as part of the financial disclosure and trying to explain some of his finances, Mr. Musquiz represented or said that he had diabetes, Your Honor.
But they didn't know about his education or any of that stuff?
No, Your Honor. Nothing in the record points to his education. Okay. And according to this court in Anderson, in one of the footnotes, pertinent circumstances must be explicitly addressed when determining fault. And here, these circumstances are more than pertinent. They go to comprehension. They go to physical and mental condition. And again, these are things that the board itself, in its own regulations, state that it must consider. Again, according to this court in Anderson, it must be explicitly addressed, not just considered. So these all go to the subjective elements of fault. This court has stated in Albalus as well, fault determination, at least in a Social Security context, is highly subjective, highly individualized, and highly dependent on the interaction between the intentions and state of mind of the claimant, the peculiar circumstances of the situation. All this to say that the Railroad Retirement Board had an obligation to consider these subjective circumstances, to consider these pertinent circumstances, and the debt specialist, the hearings officer, and the board itself did not consider that, and that is grounds for reversal in itself. But these mistakes, these errors, are exacerbated because Mr. Musquiz proceeded pro se. This court in Cox v. Califano states, ALJs, in this case the hearings officer, have a heightened duty and must scrupulously and conscientiously probe into, inquire of, and explore all the relevant facts, while being especially diligent in ensuring that favorable as well as unfavorable facts are elicited.
Did Mr. Musquiz ever say that he didn't understand the computation or didn't understand what was expected of him?
He states in his hearing testimony multiple times that he doesn't even remember.
You're not answering my question. Not being able to remember is not the same thing as being able to understand what he's representing. I mean, did he ever say, I don't understand the regulations regarding estimating income other than RRB and how I should report it? Is there any evidence of that?
That's my recollection, no, Your Honor, and I'll go back into the testimony. But, again, even if he didn't say that he didn't understand specifically, these factors, including age, education, comprehension, physical and mental condition, I would submit to the court that they also go into not just understanding, but remembering, but knowing these subjective elements as well. Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the court...
Counsel, I have a question, if I may, please.
Yes, Judge Gold.
For the years after 2012, after he had disclosed his extra income, after that disclosure was made, didn't he continue to receive the annuities without changing the amount based on the extra income we have.
Your Honor, Mr. Muskie's didn't disclose this per se until 2015 when he was asked by the Railroad Retirement Board. But this goes back to our second point, that the Railroad Retirement Board did know about these wages from 2013 on. And so this independent reason failure to consider the board's own role with these letters from June 2013 to December 2015 requires reversal and remand in its own right. I point to the letters, as Judge Gold, I think you're referring to. These letters are facially misleading, as the dissenting member points out. The letters, and this is on page 82, 86, and 90 of the administrative record. The beginning, they state, your monthly annuity payments have been adjusted. Then they paint, or they show the work, they show how the annuity payments have been adjusted. Then they state, additional wages that you earned outside the railroad industry are now available to include in the Tier 1 portion of your annuity. And this could lead any reasonable person in Mr. Muskie's shoes to believe that not only does the Railroad Retirement Board have his wage information, indeed it did, but that it has already calculated the differences with this wage information in mind and done it for them, and there's no longer a reporting requirement. Indeed, I point the court to the dissenting member's opinion. He says, as of 2013, the RRB was aware of Mr. Muskie's earnings, but after receiving the first letter, why would Mr. Muskie think there was any need for him to report his wages? He certainly made no attempt to mislead.
Did the Railroad Retirement Board know exactly how much he was making? Did he fill that out and send it in to him?
They did through a Social Security wage match. So as of June 2013, Your Honor, when the Railroad Retirement Board sent that first letter to Mr. Muskie's, they were aware of Mr. Muskie's wages outside the Railroad Retirement Board.
The Social Security Administration reported the wages that Muskie's earned outside from the hospital to the RRB, right?
Yes, Your Honor. At the very least, there was some kind of wage match done between the Railroad Retirement Board and the Social Security Administration, but yes, the board was aware of those wages from June 2013 through December 2015.
And is there any indication that they said the adjustments were irregular, or there's a presumption of regularity in governmental work? It's been around for a long time, since 1926. Was there any indication that Muskie's had done anything wrong in reporting his income?
No, Your Honor. The letters clearly say that, you know, they have the wages, and they've been calculating his annuity. And this happened three times. There are three letters between June 2013 through December 2015, which make it very clear to Mr. Muskie's that they have his wages, and they've changed his annuity.
And the FSSA report shows that he was earning between $41,000 and $45,000 in those 3 years.
Yes, Your Honor.
That was reported to the RRB. And they said, additional wages that you earned outside the railroad industry are now available to include in the Tier 1 portion of your annuity. And then they started paying him this annuity.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. Okay. Facially misleading, as the dissenting member pointed out. So at the very most, objectively misleading, and something that I think this court can reverse and remand at least to June 2013, December 2015, without a hearing, because they are so objectively misleading. But at the very least, this court can reverse and remand to hold, to gather additional facts as to whether or not it's subjectively misled Mr. Muskie is, because it's on the record. The hearings officer, the debt specialist, the railroad.
But there are two elements to the RRB. One is that the reporting worker not be at fault. And the second is sort of a vague thing that his actions have to be consistent with equity and good conscience, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Address yourself to that. Why does Muskie's action constitute fulfillment of equity and good conscience?
Well, Your Honor, as a dissenting member stated, I think we would submit at this time that the record is stale and that the court should remand to conduct additional fact-finding as to whether or not Mr. Muskie's has met this factor. But if this court would consider that the record is very complete, Mr. Muskie's, or the government has stated that Mr. Muskie's, at least in the government's answering brief, that Mr. Muskie's has submitted evidence that he has shown that there's equity and good conscience, or that it meets at least the Railroad Retirement Act's purposes, because...
What evidence is that?
The financial...
That he can't afford a haircut?
Not only that, Your Honor, but that he relied on the Railroad Retirement Board's annuity payments to buy a house, that he relied on these payments for his diabetes medication, and for otherwise, you know, without these payments or with these deductions, he'd be at the very edge of sustenance. And unless this court has any further questions, I will reserve the balance of my time.
I have a question for you, if I may, please.
Yes, Judge Gould.
So I understand the basis of his claim very well. For the annuity years commencing 2013. But what's your position on what we should do with the 2012 annuity year when the annuity, as I understand, was paid before the board was aware of the added income?
Your Honor, our position is that this court should reverse remand because the board failed in its legal obligations to consider the subjective elements of, you know, ability to understand reporting requirements, comprehension, physical and mental condition, because even though the evidence was clear in the record and it was pertinent. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Mr. Polk.
Good morning, Your Honors. Patrick Polk on behalf of the respondent U.S. Railroad Retirement Board. This case at its core is straightforward. Mr. Muskie's is required by law to repay his Railroad Retirement Act annuity overpayment because he does not qualify for waiver. The record shows, and the Railroad Retirement Board correctly found, that Mr. Muskie's was not without fault in causing his overpayment because
what was his fault?
Because he knew or should have known, the second half of that being most important, that he was required to report to the RRB both, one, his excess earnings, and two, that he returned to his job at SBC Hospital, his last non-railroad pre-retirement employer. Petitioner's argument repeatedly emphasizes that Mr. Muskie's did not have a subjective or technical understanding of the reporting requirements, but it completely fails to address the issue of whether Mr. Muskie's had the capacity to understand them. It is unfortunate that Mr. Musquez reports that he has financial difficulties that have been exacerbated by the passing of his wife. However, the law is clear that the IRB must recover the overpayment, and we cannot reach the issue of his financial circumstances.
Was it improper for him to think that the government, through Social Security, was already advising the Railroad Retirement Board about this extra income, and so he shouldn't have to tell them about it again?
It's the board's position that, yes, that is improper. The law explicitly puts the burden on Mr. Musquiz to affirmatively report his excess earnings. It does not relieve him of his duty to report to the IRB just because of wage match information from the SSA. In fact, he cannot rely on the SSA providing wage match information. This case is a clear example of exactly why the Railroad Retirement Act and the board's regulations put this affirmative requirement onto annuitants, because there can be a delay, because there can be a delay in both the reporting from the SSA and also in processing and realizing that there is a deduction that applies. Specifically, the key letters that are being pointed to are the June 2013, 2014, and 2015 letters. Importantly, those letters do not state that he has no more duty to report his excess earnings. They do not make it clear that it is taking into account earnings limitations because he is under full retirement age.
Wait a minute. Take a look at those letters. Mm-hmm. Your monthly annuity payments have been adjusted.
Yes.
Does that tell the person who gets that everything is hunky-dory?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Specifically, of course, importantly, these letters are notifying him of an increase in his annuity because of additional earnings that would fall under Social Security. So it
increase in the annuity, decrease in the annuity because of his income.
These are all these three letters are notices of an increase in his annuity because he had additional earnings that fall under Social Security, which is the Tier 1 portion. So the adjustment, he should have been aware that the adjustment contemplated in these letters does not take into account any applicable deductions because he had a greater annuity after these letters came through.
Well, let me ask you this. In the SSA, this is a Social Security notification that has what the earnings are, right?
Yes.
Doesn't it tell the RRB where they came from?
Yes, I believe.
So isn't that evidence he's gone back to his old job?
Yes, but again, this is, if you can look at the letters again, it is administrative record page 82, 86, and 90. These are machine letters that are just a notice of an increase in annuity because he has any additional earnings outside the rail industry. It does not say where he worked in the letters. None of that is considered when this letter is automatically generated. It's just SSA gave us information that you have more work history, therefore your annuity was increased because you have greater earnings outside the rail industry, and that's all. So it wasn't considered, and again, specifically because this process, the IRB obviously has a lot of annuitants, and this letter does not contemplate any possible deductions, and it doesn't say anything about deductions. And again, most importantly, both the IRA itself explicitly requires the individuals to report excess earnings, and also the IRB's regulations say that even if there was an error on the part of the agency, it does not extinguish the fault on the part of the annuitant. That's 20 CFR 255.11D4.
Are you claiming that there is a difference between what the SSA reported as earnings and what Mr. Muskies should have reported as earnings?
I believe that most likely the information is accurate from SSA. I think the numbers and the...
Listen to my question, Mr. Polk. Are you, the government, claiming there's a difference between what he actually earned and should have reported and what SSA reported he earned?
I believe that the SSA information is accurate and would be in alignment with what he said.
So claim that the RRB was misled as a result of failure to say what his earnings were by Mr. Muskies, nor is the RRB misled by failing to say he'd gone back to work to his old job because they knew where his money was coming from the hospital. So, as a result of the SSA, the RRB had precisely the same information which Mr. Musquiz was required to give the RRB. True?
Yes, he was, and there's no accusation that he attempted to deceive. And there's
so
no requirement.
The fault?
The fault is in failing to report.
What's the damage to RRB?
The damage is paying excess funds out of the trust.
Didn't pay excess funds because they said the adjustment's been made.
They paid excess funds because he did not tell us that he returned to work for SBC Hospital or had excess earnings, and therefore no deductions were applied.
Well, but I'm confused. If the RRB had exactly the information which Musquiz, you claim, should have given them personally, and they made a calculation and they made an overpayment, the fault might be with RRB, not with Mr. Musquiz. Have you investigated the person who made the error?
Our position is that there was no error made as far, it is not like there was a miscalculation on the part of the RRB that he, his benefits were improperly calculated beyond what his earnings should have shown based on the information.
And who did the calculation?
A claims adjuster, I'm sure, within the
RRB. Did you go after him?
No, Your Honor.
Well, okay.
I want to point out that RRA Section 2E4, which is 45 U.S.C. 231A-E4, explicitly puts the burden on the annuitant to report excess earnings. So it is a duty that he owes. Even if it had been the same information that the SSA provided to him, this is the exact sort of scenario where it shows that it cannot be immediately adjusted for all possible deductions. So Mr. Musquiz still owed the duty to notify the RRB, even though SSA provided earnings information.
And if he had notified the RRB with precision, the same result would have happened, right?
I don't believe that's accurate, Your Honor, because then first of all, the analysis would be completely different as far as the RRB's fault regulations because specifically he was found at fault because he did not report information he knew or should have known was material. And so if he did provide that.
If he reported the information he should have reported, those numbers would have been precisely the same as the SSA. True?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Counsel Judge Gould, if I could ask you a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think I share the concern that Judge Bay is suggesting. It is how can he really be at fault after the agency has all the information about his income? So why don't you give me your best argument on that?
The primary reason is because the letters themselves, even if they are beyond confusing and actually an error on the part of the RRB, 20 CFR 255.11D4 specifically says that does not relieve Mr. Musquiz of being at fault specifically for providing information that he knew or should have known. And importantly, very distinguishable from the cases cited in opposing counsel's briefs, this is a very easy requirement to fill. The information requested is very straightforward, and he was warned multiple times that he had to provide it. Specifically, I want to turn to the application form itself in the record that in all capital letters said that he had to report if he returned to SBC Hospital. Even if Mr. Musquiz is claiming that he did not have a subjective understanding of the requirements or the consequences of the requirements, the application form itself was extremely brief and clear and said you must report if you earn over the annual exempt earnings amount and you must report if you return to SBC Hospital, and he did not do so. The questions asked by Your Honor were very on point regarding Mr. Musquiz's raising of the issues with his understanding. He did not provide any explanation for how he could fail to understand these straightforward forms. There's no evidence on the record that he was incapable of understanding what was was required of him. He didn't raise any issues about his age, education, or physical or mental condition that could have led to not understanding the simple form itself.
Was the Social Security Administration sending this information to the Railroad Retirement Board? They tend to do that. You know, if he's working and they're taking out Social Security funds, did they do that?
Again, that's the wage match information that's been discussed. So in generally, yes, and here, the wage information was provided from SSA to the RRB.
Let me ask you once again, because I don't know as much as you obviously do about the operation of this agency. Had Mr. Muskie done everything exactly right and said, these are my earnings from my hospital work, and I've gone back to my old job, and he reported the numbers which the SSA had reported to the RRB, right, as coming from the hospital, how would that have changed the RRB payments to him?
They would have been deducted if he notified us. That's exactly
it. It would have been deductible?
They would have applied the excess earnings and LPE deductions if he had notified us, because it would have been flagged to be processed for possible deductions. And again,
and when you learn that from the SSA, they weren't flagged.
Correct. It again, it's just a mechanical process of you have these earnings and therefore your Tier 1 goes up because you have more earnings that fall under SSA.
But if the same information is given to the RRB by SSA as should have been given by Muskies, tell me why the product is different.
Because when there is an adjustment for outside earnings, it is not, it just cannot be administratively done where every possible deduction is counted against the earnings, and therefore that is where the law specifically puts the burden on the annuitant. They are the ones in the best position to know if they have done any of the things in the short list of things on the application, such as returning to work for one specific employer or specifically exceeding one annual amount. They are the ones in the best position to know if they've met those criteria and have the affirmative duty to report to the RRB.
So the RRB doesn't deduct outside earnings from the annuity if the applicant doesn't report it, even though the information which would justify the deduction was in the hands of the RRB.
And again, if you notice, the first letter was issued in June of 2013.
The answer to that is yes, right?
The answer is, I'm sorry, could you rephrase that?
Why is there a deduction if there's a report by the annuitant, but no deduction if there is no report by the annuitant, when the information to the RRB is identical?
Just administratively, it has to be flagged, or there will be a long delay, such as there was here in December of 2015, when it was first realized by the RRB. Just administratively, it is not run against every possible deduction, and so it is different when a person affirmatively reports to the RRB versus just processing and receiving information on a delay.
So the RRB doesn't flag the return for computation of the deduction unless the annuitant makes a report, even though it has that information.
Ultimately, it was found in December of 2015, but yes, not immediately when the first letter is generated.
Thank you.
Abdul, I have a question for you further.
Yes, Your Honor.
If at least once the agency has the information, why isn't this a situation that brings to mind the slang expression, no harm, no foul?
I believe, Your Honor, that there's the harm in that that no deduction was applied. I'm sorry, I don't understand how it applies in this situation, because the harm is just overpaying the annuity benefits and that occurred here. I'm sorry.
Okay, but if the payments are overpaid by the board after it has the proper information, why isn't it the board that's at fault rather than the worker?
Because the regulation specifically states when the person knew or should have known that they had to report material information to the RRB, and here he had his application and forms RB1, RB9, and G77A that all explicitly informed him of his duty to report his excess earnings and returning to SBC Hospital. And so specifically the regulations say that he can be found at fault in this exact circumstance because he knew or should have known that he had material information to report to the board.
Thank you, Captain. We're taking up past our time. Thank you, Mr. Polk.
Thank you.
Mr. Boyd, do you have any rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor. I'll be brief. Just to correct a few things from opposing counsel, he stated that Mr. Muskies was warned multiple times. He was warned just once in that certification. And from June 2013 on, it was those misleading letters, as the court's pointed out. And opposing counsel said they first realized in December 2015, according to the record again, from June 2013 on, they knew the Social Security, through his Social Security matches, about Mr. Muskie's wages. Your Honor, you point out the damage to the RRB. If anything, it's self-inflicted. The dissenting member again states the intent of the reporting requirements is to make sure that the RRB has the information needed to correctly compute an individual's annuity rate. They knew from June 2013 on that information, they had that information. Any damage to that is self-inflicted. The letters also. They affected Mr. Muskies' whether or not he knew, whether or not he should have known. And so, you know, opposing counsel keeps talking about this objective knew or should have known standard. Those letters should be taken into account when determining whether or not Mr. Muskies knew or should have known about his reporting requirements. And then finally, you know, we're talking, we discussed understanding a little bit. The record does show that he didn't understand or was ignorant about what was going on in the SOD pages. 8 and 171 of the administrative record. Again, this should trigger fact-finding, at the very least, under Anderson. Under
the work that he did on the railroad? I don't know whether he's a conductor, an engineer, or a Gandhi dancer, right?
I don't, Your Honor. But I do know he worked for the railroad retirement board for many years. And with that, I see my time is out. Thank you for your time.
My honors. I want to thank counsel for an original and very well put together argument, and the case of Muskies versus the USRRB is submitted for determination.